it's also exciting to see companies that don't have a healthcare background, because when we think about how can you be truly innovative, someone who comes in and is thinking a little bit outside the healthcare box can bring some fresh insight from other industries. I think sometimes it's maybe a little bit frustrating for them because healthcare doesn't function the same way as other industries. They have some expectations about, oh, well, surely this will be a certain way. And we have to say, well, actually, it's not.
Episode of Pop Health Podcast. This is your host, Zach Morgan. It's good to be back with you. I'm excited to share my conversation today with Anne Wellington, the Managing Director of the Cedars-Sinai Tech Accelerator, powered by TechStars. On this show, we like to talk a lot about new advances in technology and the impact it has on the healthcare industry. And at the Cedars-Sinai Tech Accelerator, they're actively fostering and trying to help startup companies learn and explore the healthcare space in attempts to find the new and exciting advances that will shape the way we receive healthcare and the way it's delivered throughout the future. Anne takes an important role here. As an entrepreneur herself, she oversees not only the entrance of different startups into the program, but also connecting them with the right mentors and helping them overcome some of the challenges they may face along the way. We'll talk to Anne about a myriad of topics covering not only technology, but also her thoughts on leadership and Los Angeles and the explosive growth of Silicon Beach here. We hope you enjoy the episode. And as always, you can find more episodes on pophealthpodcast.com. Thanks again. We like to do to start each episode. Can you tell us a little bit about yourself? Maybe something that people might not know about you, something outside of work, maybe?
Sure. So people who've spent a little bit of time with me probably have heard me talk about this, but something that's very near and dear to my heart, especially this time of year, is I spent about 10 summers as a camp counselor at a summer camp in Wisconsin. And so from when I was 16 up through high school, through college, and even a little bit after college when I probably should have been a real grown-up and gotten a different job, I was at summer camp every summer. So as summer approaches every year, I start to think about, I wish I were at camp. So
yeah.
That's something I miss a lot. It was a horseback riding camp, so had a lot of kids and horses and really a good time every summer. So.
Yeah. Did you grow up yourself riding horses?
Mm-hmm. Yeah. I started riding horses. I think the first time I ever rode a horse was my 7th birthday party. We got to go on like a trail ride and I was completely hooked. So rode horses all growing up. And like I mentioned, sort of taught horseback riding at summer camp, rode on the equestrian team at my college. And it was really a big part of my life for a long time. But now being in Los Angeles, it's a little bit less accessible, so I haven't been riding very much lately.
Yeah.
But hopefully sometime in the future, I'll get back into that.
A little bit less space out here to ride.
a little bit crowded.
So kind of jumping into a little bit of your experience, you're talking about your background. You yourself are an entrepreneur. Can you give the audience a little bit of an idea of your experience that brought you here?
Yeah. So I think I'm a little bit of a accidental entrepreneur in that when I left school, I had a degree in economics and wasn't quite sure where I wanted to go with that or what I wanted to do. I was recruited by Epic in Madison to come work as a project manager for Epic Systems, working in their clinical products, mostly on the inpatient side, so orders and clinical documentation.
Yeah. And for our audience, that's the Epic, right?
Epic Systems Corporation, yeah. the big one, headquartered in Madison. And I was working, as I mentioned, there over the summers, so kind of stayed in the Madison area. And it was really my first introduction to healthcare as anything other than a very occasional patient. And so a crash course, not only in the healthcare IT side of things, but healthcare as an industry and as a business. And so I worked at Epic for about 3 years and really got a lot of exposure to especially the inpatient side of patient care, which was really interesting for me. After I left Epic, I traveled for a while, so I took some time off and did some international travel, which was amazing.
Do you mind if I ask where?
Oh, sure. So I did a round-the-world trip. So okay. I started from Chicago and then went through Europe. I got a Eurorail pass and traveled all around. And then kind of ended the Europe leg in Istanbul and flew from Istanbul to Kuala Lumpur in Malaysia.
Wow.
And then did a few more months in Southeast Asia.
Yeah.
And then was very broke. So I came home and went back right back into healthcare consulting.
Yeah.
So switched over from working for Epic to consulting for organizations that were implementing Epic and eventually landed at Cedars-Sinai. It was great for me as someone who has that sort of economics and that background and not necessarily a clinical background to be able to see how technology could improve patient care and really improve outcomes, even if I've, you know, never been to medical school and am not providing direct patient care.
Yeah.
And over a lot of the work I've done, both myself and other people I've talked to kind of on the technology side, I'll say, oh, well, that's one of my favorite things about working in health tech is it's a great aspect of tech to be in. It feels better than advertising or finance or things like that when you know you're having a very direct and positive impact on patient care.
Sure, sure. And so now we're sitting in the Cedars-Sinai Accelerator powered by Techstars.
Yes.
The office itself is looks like if you wrote what a millennial workspace looks like. It's gorgeous. Lots of shared working space. First of all, how do you feel about shared working spaces in general?
Ooh, in general, I'm an old millennial, so I have to say I don't love them.
I'm with you.
I'm like
easily distracted,
a little bit of it, but I would rather have an office with a door that closes and
right.
can kind of shut things out.
So powered by Techstars, what is the relationship between Cedars-Sinai and Techstars?
Sure. So Cedars and Techstars collaborate together on the accelerator in a model that is very similar to a lot of other industry verticals that Techstars is in. So for folks that maybe don't have as much background on Techstars, they operate about 40 accelerator programs around the world. And those fall into a few different categories. Some are what they call the city programs, and those are sort of geographically based, and they pull from the sort of entrepreneurial ecosystem within a specific city. We're on their sort of corporate or industry-focused partnerships. They have other partnerships. For example, they do a retail partnership with Target. They have a mobility partnership with Ford. And this is Techstars Healthcare Accelerator.
Gotcha.
So Cedars brings in a lot of the healthcare industry expertise. We give access to the companies that come through the program to a lot of clinicians and stakeholders at Cedars. Mm-hmm. Depending on the particular company, who they're working with at Cedars can vary a lot. So it's not just physicians and providers. It's not just IT people. It might be folks on the finance and revenue side. It might be facilities. It might be someone in the occupational therapy.
Right.
Really, we work with the companies to figure out who is everyone in the health system who would potentially have an opinion on the product that you're trying to bring to market.
Yeah.
And that can be complex at a large health system. I think one of the challenges we see our companies facing is they come in with a mentality that, oh, the physician is my end user.
Yeah.
Therefore, they're the one whose opinion I only need to focus on that opinion.
Right.
When the reality of selling into a health system is, well, you probably need them. You might need to understand the workflow of their office staff. You need to know sort of the purchasing process, the IT process. And so really guiding our companies through navigating what it's like to engage with a large health system is something that we help a lot of them with.
Yeah. So is the relationship between Cedars-Sinai and Techstars a unique one, even in the realm of Techstars itself? Is this the main healthcare accelerator?
Yeah. So this is the healthcare accelerator. We're their partner for healthcare engagement. We focus entirely on B2B companies that would be selling into healthcare systems. There are participants in some other Techstars programs that are doing consumer-focused
sure.
health and wellness products. And because of the way Techstars network work. Sometimes they do ping us to give feedback or advice to companies in other areas. And similarly, if we have companies who would benefit from talking to someone in one of their other programs, we can make that connection as well.
Oh, and with the worldwide locations, that's got to be quite a network of experience to draw from. So how do you attract talent, and what is the goal of the accelerator here?
The goal, and I'll talk about the goal, and then that'll sort of lead into the, the talent attraction. The goal is multifaceted. So we want to do a few different things. One is really identify promising early stage companies, and kind of on the investment and acceleration part, say, you know, who do we want to place a bet on that we think has something that's really, really compelling and is going to help improve healthcare and improve healthcare delivery? And so try and identify companies we think really can make an impact and help them get into the market faster. From sort of the local Cedars-Sinai perspective, we're also looking for really cool companies that are solving problems that Cedars directly has.
Sure.
And so if there's challenges that the health system faces that companies we're working with can help fix, we want to bring them in and use it as validation that they're solving a real problem and that they'll get traction in the market, and also that it's a solution that Cedars-Sinai can use and deploy and really get out to their patients and providers.
Yeah. And so do people apply? Do you approach them? Do you have companies that come in from worldwide, like the Techstar reach, or is it mostly from the California area? How does that work?
Yeah. So the first class that started was a lot of LA-based companies. Over the three classes, and we're just about to start our fourth class this summer, that reach has really expanded a lot. We meet companies in a whole variety of different ways. We do a lot of sort of trips out to various cities and conferences to meet with investors, meet with other accelerators, follow up on referrals from previous participants to try and find promising companies.
Yeah.
And then also there's sort of an application process where companies find us. So that's a little bit, there's sort of bidirectional, us looking for them, them finding us. We do now have a global reach. So in our last class, we had two international companies, one from Australia, one from the UK, that came over and were using the program as a way to get a little bit of a foothold in the US market, understand the US health system a little bit and how their particular product might fit into our ecosystem here. So we have seen the program grow a lot over the course of the programs or of the classes, from being a little bit more LA, drawing from LA, to being very broad in reach.
And how long are each of the classes?
90 days or 12 weeks. So we start
it's intensive.
It's very intensive, and especially sort of the format of the program is, especially the first month or so, we cycle through dozens and dozens of mentors who come not only from Cedars-Sinai, but from other healthcare organizations, whether that's provider organizations, payers, pharma, all sorts of folks who might be interested or have advice for these companies on how they can really improve their product. And it really varies per company what they're looking for. So we bring in tons of folks, and then usually the companies choose a group of maybe 5 to 10 mentors to really dig in and establish a longer term relationship with, that they're going to work with over the course of the program and get as much helpful feedback as possible.
Yeah. Do you find that there are a lot of potential startups or ideas that are very similar? As an outsider looking in, it seems like there are about 50 million startups that are all focused on, you know, predictive analytics. And I know that that's a huge area. I know that you have a lot of expertise in that area too, but it just seems like there's a whole lot of places going in that one direction, or maybe in specific types of wearables. Do you find that there is just a lot of overlap?
Yeah, I think there's certain categories where we do see a lot of overlap. I would say the predictive analytics is one. Some of the PT space around wearables to analyze movement and trying to get that into a PT and rehab space. device cybersecurity.
Right.
So there are definitely some groups where we see, oh, we're getting a lot of applications in this one space.
Yeah. It must make the truly unique companies stand out a lot more, though.
Oh, absolutely. When there's a product that comes in that we have, like, oh, this is truly novel, it definitely catches your eye. Because after you've read, you know, the applications and seen a lot of similar products, something that is unique is really stands out.
Yeah. So first, can you let us know how many companies have gone through the first three classes? And then can you share about some of the exciting companies or successes that have come out so far?
We've had 28 companies go through the first three classes. We typically target around 9 or 10 companies in each class, and we feel like that's a really good amount to have here in the space, really build a community between all those companies working together, and at the same time, not have anyone sort of get lost in the shuffle. There's other programs that will take significantly more companies. And we feel like the amount of individualized attention that we want each company to get makes 10 kind of a nice number to have. Some of the companies we worked with, and I think, you know, we've seen lots of success stories, and certainly all of the companies we believe in strongly, or we wouldn't have brought them in.
Right.
But I'll highlight a few that I think really got a lot out of the program and came in and went out at different places.
Not picking favorites.
Just not like picking favorites.
People don't have favorite kids. And not
All the companies are great.
Yeah.
But a few I'll highlight. One is a company called Applied VR, and they are using virtual reality to treat pain. And they came in with a lot of entrepreneurial experience and had worked using VR in some other industries, but really wanted to understand the applications of VR in healthcare. And so we were able to connect them with folks at Cedars who are really doing sort of the more clinical and research side of things and help advance the science of using virtual reality in this way. And so now they're in over 190 hospitals across the US. They're in about 8 countries globally. So they were one that was in kind of that first class. And so they've had about 2 years of continued growth after leaving the program. And I think working on that clinical side of things really helped them to hone their product and find the real value and benefit to it, and also make it seem real to people who they're selling to.
Sure.
I think some of these technologies, and VR is a perfect example.
Yeah, I think video games, like that's like the first thing that pops in my head. So I can imagine that with healthcare, it's hard to connect those dots.
Yeah, there's a little bit of skepticism about, well, this is cool, but is this real?
Right.
And so I think being able to engage with folks at Cedars to do some research and really prove the reality of the virtual reality, I think was very beneficial to them as a company.
Yeah.
Another one who I would mention is a company called DeepSix AI. And they came in with a somewhat similar challenge in that they had a really great technology platform that was using machine learning and AI to process patient data. And they had some ideas about how they wanted to use it, but really were kind of a solution in search of a problem. And so we were able to connect them with a lot of people at the health system to say, you know, here's what I would use this for, here's what I would pay, things like that, to say not only is there a cool solution, but we can actually help build a real company around this product. They used the program to develop a platform that identifies patients for clinical trials, and really have gotten some great traction with that. They won the accelerator competition for the enterprise and smart data category at South by Southwest. They've met with Joe Biden to talk about how their product can support some of the research they're doing at his cancer institute, his cancer foundation, sorry. So I think they really were able to take what was promising technology and turn it into a real solution.
Yeah.
And then one other I would mention is a company called Stasis. Stasis Labs brought in a sort of lightweight, easy to install patient monitoring device that had a cloud-based platform for analyzing the data that it was creating. And I think they're a really interesting case because through the program, we were able to connect them with a lot of people who could give them great advice and great mentoring. And one of the conclusions that the program sort of helped them reach was their ideal customer is not a large academic medical center. Those sorts of facilities typically have solutions in place already, and it would be difficult for them to say, oh, we're going to rip all this out and replace it. Sure. But they were able to find some other great markets. So they're doing really well in India, and they have some connections there and are really being able to deploy their product there and add that additional monitoring and infrastructure that might not have otherwise been available. And they're looking at expanding elsewhere in South Asia. And as they're thinking about the U.S. market, really targeting it more on smaller community hospitals, sure, rural hospitals. And so I think it's a great example of how the program can help companies, even if the conclusion is this isn't an ideal customer, but let us help you find what would be.
Yeah. You said something interesting in there that I just want to touch on. You said solution in search of a problem. That's an interesting thought, because a lot of tech innovation, they're innovating things for the tech industry. So they're already plugged into that industry. One of the unique challenges, I think, with technology and healthcare is that there is already a healthcare system and they're trying to either plug things in or, like you said, kind of change the way that certain things are done. Do you find that, or I guess just what is the breakdown in the entrepreneurs that you come across that have a healthcare background, or do most of them have a tech background and actually aren't really that familiar with the healthcare system itself?
Yeah, that's a good question. I'm trying to think of what the breakdown is.
Do most of them have some sort of a healthcare background, or for the most part, is the healthcare industry kind of foreign to them?
I would say the slight majority of the companies we talk to have someone on their team who has a healthcare background.
Yeah.
And sometimes that's someone who they've recruited onto the team specifically for that purpose.
Yeah.
And other times it really is they have, the whole team has sort of been embedded in healthcare. So probably around 60, maybe 70% of the companies we talk to have someone with some healthcare background.
Yeah.
Which I think can be really beneficial in thinking about the how it actually fits into the realities of the healthcare system.
Right.
But it's also exciting to see companies that don't have a healthcare background, because when we think about how can you be truly innovative, someone who comes in and is thinking a little bit outside the healthcare box,
yeah,
can bring some fresh insight from other industries. I think sometimes it's maybe a little bit frustrating for them. Because healthcare doesn't function
right
the same way as other industries, they have some expectations about,
right,
oh, well, surely this will be a certain way. And we have to say, well, actually,
yeah,
it's not.
We work
so
a lot.
There's some adjustment there, yeah.
Yeah, we work a lot in the senior care industry. And I think that you talked about the difference. You focus on B2B here, but we come across a lot of products that are directly to consumer. But I think that that sometimes can be a detriment for some of the companies when they have just that, no, like maybe they don't have the best idea of the healthcare landscape itself. And then they can't understand why seniors aren't creating these products that they think are excellent, but it's not really designed for the senior or the elderly person to think that it's also excellent. And so there's a real disconnect sometimes. And like you said, they can't understand why, like, I think this is great. I don't understand why, you know, everybody else doesn't think this is great also.
Yeah, I think, and it's interesting. One of the challenges, I think, overall for the tech innovation in healthcare is a lot of the people who are doing tech innovation are somewhat disconnected from the typical healthcare consumer.
Right.
And so we see things like, a good example that you mentioned sort of in the senior care, when we see apps around, a caregiver for someone with cognitive decline or with dementia is going to use this app to record things so that the provider can see it. It's a great concept, but oftentimes their caregiver isn't actually a child or someone who's super tech savvy. It might be their spouse,
right,
who is not really familiar or adept with using an iPad to record a lot of symptoms and send it to the physician.
Right.
So I think bridging that gap of creating solutions for healthcare that don't just target tech workers,
right,
who are,
right,
typically young, affluent, well-educated, and healthy, but the more typical consumers of healthcare who might not have those same advantages.
Yeah. And so just kind of completing the circle on some of the accelerator work and just innovation and startups in general. Despite a lot of the public perception that gets spent on the really successful ideas and startups. Not all startups succeed. We actually had Kyle Hill, the former CEO of Home Hero, actually an alumni of the Cedars-Sinai Accelerator Program, now with Harvey Health. He was on, he talked about the shortfalls of Home Hero and in that model, and then their subsequent pivot to now being Harvey. As an entrepreneur yourself and in your role here, how do you manage the expectations of success and failure with the entrepreneurs while also balancing that with your responsibility to Cedars-Sinai?
Definitely. So I think with entrepreneurs, we always try to, and I think they have an understanding of this as well, that the sort of fail fast concept is really ideal. And so as we're working with them to figure out, you know, does this product have a fit in our health system or in any health system, and trying to figure out where do we actually see this going, I think there's a general understanding, and we try to help them to this realization if they don't have it, that it's better to know as quickly as possible.
Sure.
So a company that comes to a program like we have, that they spend 3 months getting lots of feedback. If those 3 months, I think, can be difficult, if a lot of the feedback is, we don't think this is going to work, or there's a lot of challenges here, hopefully we, in selecting companies, have done a good job in finding companies that have some path to success. But I think even having to feel like, oh, we've got to shift what we're doing in order to get there, can be really challenging. But when we sort of frame it as, it's better to find that out in 3 months than in 3 years of sort of struggling in the market, not being having challenges and figuring out why maybe you're not getting traction. Yeah. So I think it might be a sort of quick and painful process of, You're going to have to shift how you're thinking about this if you want this company to be successful.
Yeah. Not to mention burning through cash.
And it's very expensive in a lot of ways. From the Cedars perspective, you know, I think Cedars has a good understanding and expectation of what it means to be engaged with an accelerator program. And so while we bring in companies that we, as I said, sort of see a path to success for, and see them as a good potential partner in the future, there is definitely understanding that in working through the accelerator program with the companies, some of them might choose to pivot or to do things, move in a direction that makes them less applicable to Cedars, or they might not be successful long term. And I think there is an understanding on the part of the health system of sort of what it means to be innovative in that way. I think similarly, you know, Cedars is a large research organization. And so there's a very close familiarity with, we're going to try a lot of stuff. Some of it might work, some of it might not. Hopefully we'll get to some breakthroughs and be able to create something that really contributes to medicine. But we know that in trying to identify and find those things, not everything will be successful.
Yeah.
So I think it's a great organization to kind of have that understanding of when we think about startups.
Yeah. It's almost a venture capital mentality from Cedars-Sinai, it sounds like. Like, we understand that we're throwing some things at the wall, but we think that there's potential. It sounds like they've almost adopted a mentality somewhat like that.
Yeah. I think we... Cedars is not all the way to the end of that spectrum where we do try and, as I said, sort of identify companies we think have a very strong likelihood of success both in the market and working with Cedars, but with that sort of expectation that it's an accelerator program, and part of working with early stage companies is just knowing the numbers that they won't all be successful.
Yeah. We're going to take a quick break and come right back. All right, so shifting just a little bit, what book or books do you recommend to people when asked?
One I've been recommending a lot lately is a book called The Healing of America by T.R. Reid. And that is a book that looks at a lot of health systems that Americans would be less familiar with, like Germany, Japan, Switzerland, and so some interesting insights into what the advantages and disadvantages of different healthcare delivery systems are around the world. And so it really gives a lot of good global insight into effective ways to deliver healthcare. And I like it because I think that even within our own health system, even within people who work in healthcare, understanding the difference between the private payers and Medicare, and then things like how the DoD or VA deliver care and things like that, because we are such a mixture of different healthcare systems, even within our own country, it helps to see some different versions to understand sort of internally what we're looking at. So that book I found tremendously interesting and recommend to a lot of people. Another one that I would mention, I'm going to give you three.
Sure.
And they sort of move slowly away from healthcare.
That's fine.
The Undoing Project, so Michael Lewis's latest book about Daniel Kahneman and Amos Tversky, that looks at human decision making and some of the heuristics that people use in making decisions, I found personally incredibly interesting, a lot owing to sort of my interest in decision support, but just also thinking about human nature. And I found it a little bit lighter and easier reading than Kahneman's Thinking Fast and Slow. So it was like the Cliff's Notes version for me. And then the last book that I've enjoyed a lot recently is Katharine Graham's Personal History, that I picked up after seeing the movie The Post. And I went to a Q&A with one of the writers of that movie, and she talked about reading Personal History and thinking it was tremendously interesting. To me, the most fascinating part of it is that Katharine Graham, the publisher of The Washington Post, Watergate and the Pentagon Papers and that whole segment was like a chapter or two at the end of the book. So it had a tremendously interesting life growing up, sort of taking over the Washington Post and being a real figure in Washington society. That it's a fascinating book and a fascinating person. I think you have to be for Watergate to be just like, oh, this thing kind of near the end is sure. Like a footnote, basically. Sure. So yeah, those three I think would be books that I'm always trying to like press on people. Here, right. Take this. So,
right.
Yeah.
Okay. What is the best piece of advice that you've ever gotten?
I think from sort of the healthcare and entrepreneurial perspective, as a part of my background we actually didn't touch on when I was talking about sort of how I got to here was I spent several years as chief product officer at a startup called Stanson Health. Mm-hmm. And the chairman of the board of that company, Scott Weingarten, who founded Zinks and has been is a senior VP at Cedars-Sinai and chief clinical transformation officer. Tons of experience in working in healthcare delivery, and decision support. He and I would talk a lot about sort of growing the company and how we wanted to see the company become not only from a product perspective, but from a culture perspective. And he and I talked a lot about really building relationships with the customers that we were working with, and essentially that having a good product is necessary but not sufficient. Yeah. And really thinking about, especially for an early stage company where there's definitely going to be times where your product falls short of ideal. And I think that is a time when, you know, you're dealing with issues or trying to get it up to where you'd like it to be. Having the relationship with your customers and having them feel connected to you personally and not just as a vendor who's giving them a software solution really can help carry you through. Yeah. And that was really beneficial in a lot of ways in working in an early stage company, because when you get into a mindset where you start to think of the customers you're working with in kind of an oppositional way, like, oh, they're always out to find problems, and, yeah. And it becomes challenging. Reframing that as the customers that you're working with, they think of you as someone who, if not necessarily a friend, someone who they have a personal relationship with or who they like, and you have similar relationship with them, makes it a much more pleasant experience to get an early stage product out into the market and iterate and make it better. Yeah. It's kind of smooth that process a little bit.
Sure. What about the worst advice or maybe outdated advice that you've gotten?
Some advice that I think is thankfully getting outdated is when I started my career, it wasn't that long ago, so I'm glad that things are shifting. I got a lot of advice that really boiled down to, if you want to be successful in a corporate workplace, you have to basically behave like a guy. And so really anything that could be perceived as like feminine was a bad thing. And so all of this advice about not showing any emotion at work and really trying to come across in a way that is how like a stereotypical male executive would deal with something. That was advice I definitely heard when I was first entering the workforce. I think over the past few years, what we've seen is, you know, that mindset and way of interacting with the world might not be the best way for every single person to act. And so I think there's a lot more flexibility of saying, you know, let's not try to fit every person who's working in a corporate environment into a single mold, but recognize that different people bring different things to the table.
Yeah.
So I'm glad to see that sort of behave like a man advice right. begin to fall by the wayside.
Especially, it must have been working in tech. I think that Silicon Valley, as it is, gets a lot of flack. Probably rightly so for kind of being a boys club. Do you see a lot more female entrepreneurs even in your world here, or is that, has that been a little bit slower to change?
You know, somewhere between the two, I guess a few things I would say on that. I have a lot of feelings on it. I think that healthcare IT in particular has a real opportunity to be a place where there is much more diversity. I think when we look at the healthcare industry as a whole, we see so many people in healthcare from a variety of backgrounds, gender diversity. There's a lot of women working in healthcare. The majority right. of the overall healthcare workforce is female.
Right.
Unfortunately, at this point, that is not yet reflected in the tech side of things, but I think it's getting there. We've seen a lot of great female founders and co-founders applying to our program. Again, not proportional with sort of the overall population or even the workforce within healthcare.
Yeah.
But I do think that healthcare tech and healthcare IT is probably further down the line in achieving that kind of diversity than maybe a lot of other industries.
Yeah.
So I think there's a lot of reason for hope. So I'd like to see more. But we're doing well.
Yeah. I think it circles back to some of my hopefulness with it circles back to our conversation earlier about the mix on some of these entrepreneurial teams of actual healthcare experts and the technology experts together. And I think that, like you said, a lot of healthcare is especially female dominated in a lot of different aspects of it. And it would be great to see some of the practical and just years of knowledge and experience that they have also make their way into some of the innovations there as well. So,
yeah, I think it's interesting. We see a lot of physicians who come and leave medical practice and come into sort of the entrepreneurial side. Proportionally, I would expect to see more nursing and more support staff and things like that. And we don't see as much, you know, certainly some teams have RNs or have some of those folks engaged. But I think there's a tremendous opportunity for folks who are currently engaged on sort of the delivery side, whether that's as a nurse or as administrative staff or other roles within the health system, to tackle the problems that they right. see every day
right.
and start a company,
yeah.
come up with an idea. So I think we'd love to see more of that. That's yeah. great. And that's where a lot of good ideas come from.
Right. It also goes back to what you were saying about how sometimes tech is not necessarily developed for the people who are going to be using it. And sometimes yeah. a lot of ideas fall flat when they go and they present it to the, you know, say nursing staff or a team that would actually have to be using it. And it's like, no, this isn't going to help. Isn't going to help us at all.
Exactly.
So keeping on technology a little bit, what app would affect your life the most if it disappeared from your phone?
Well, if I got rid of Twitter, I would probably be like a more mentally well person, but I actually would say that Google Maps, if I got rid of Maps, I would be figuratively and literally lost.
Yeah. I plug in everywhere I'm going purely for traffic.
Oh, yeah. Oh, yeah, yeah. Especially here.
Yeah.
Unless there's no way I'm attempting to get across town in right. LA without checking routes.
Right. So. Or is there an accident on the way I usually take or something? Yeah, that would be mine too. It would it would cause a lot of headaches. What do you think is the most important qualities that you see in a leader?
I would say empathy. And I think in a couple different directions. So especially for leaders who are building a team and have a ever-expanding team, as we see with a lot of the startups who come through here are trying to scale up their team, being empathetic with all of the team members that they're bringing in and really understanding that as stressful as it is to be a CEO and founder in a company, the folks that they're bringing on feel typically a tremendous amount of responsibility and want the company to succeed. And so I think being empathetic to people on the team that you're leading is really critical. And then I think an externally facing empathy. So I was talking a little bit about building that customer relationship and making sure that you kind of maintain the mentality that you're on the same team. And maintaining that empathy for, you know, we're trying to solve a genuine problem and people are, you know, we're fixing something in the system and we're all sort of on the same side here of wanting to improve the industry that we're in. Maintaining that level of empathy and sort of relatability, I think, is key.
Yeah. So I agree with you. I think the one thing I really enjoy about, or one of the things I really enjoy about being in healthcare is that for the most part, people really are just trying to do better people better. I think that healthcare tech has been at the forefront of a lot of people's minds, but I don't think we've really seen the disruption, whether it be for cost or delivery, that I think a lot of people had maybe expected. What is something, or what are some things that are holding technology back from really changing, fundamentally changing healthcare?
You know, I think there's a few things in play, and one thing I guess I would start out with is pushing back just a little bit on, we haven't seen the level of disruption of like Netflix coming in and driving Blockbuster out of business. But if you look at how healthcare has changing thanks to technology over the past 10 years, there's a significant amount of shift that has taken place in terms of having patients have more access to their own records, even though we're, you know, that's still evolving. The rise of things like telemedicine. We're still early in a lot of these things, but I feel like there might never be that sort of seismic disruption that changes the whole industry, but there's a lot of great incremental changes that are happening. But to your point about why aren't we seeing sort of huge changes like that, I think there's a few things. One, a lot of technology innovation that we see in a lot of industries can sort of happen top down, and that top can go down very quickly. So there can be a sort of trickle down effect, but because it's on your phone or because it's fairly accessible to a lot of people, it rapidly expands. And so, you know, we see organizations like Amazon that might pilot something in San Francisco, and within a year or two, it's nationwide. That's a lot harder to do in healthcare. A lot of the innovation that is happening from sort of the Silicon Valley area tends to happen at the top, but then it's hard to get that out to other people. And some of the reasons we discussed prior that it's not necessarily being created for the majority of healthcare users. I also think, you know, certainly regulation plays into it a little bit, that it's hard to disrupt really heavily regulated industries. And so it would be sort of akin to like, well, how can we disrupt like the air travel industry? It's hard because it's a very entrenched, very regulated, very specialized industry. So I think that focusing more on incremental innovation, we'll see a sort of slow transformation rather than trying to find the thing that's going to upend the whole thing.
Do you think that, I heard someone talking about this the other day, do you think that HIPAA, without arguing the merits of HIPAA, I mean, obviously HIPAA is incredibly important, but in a space like technology innovation, do you think that HIPAA concerns also play a factor in limiting innovation?
It's an interesting question because I think, you know, in my mind, innovation should always have some sort of limitations to work around because I think it actually helps foster innovative ideas. HIPAA itself, I would say that I don't think it inhibits innovation. I think more broadly, the data ownership and data sort of use rights and sharing and things like that is something that I think a lot of people are trying to navigate right now.
Yeah.
And that sort of gray area of who owns what data, how can it be used, how can it be shared? There's lots of different opinions from different health systems. Certainly, it's something that outside of healthcare has been in the news a lot of what are technology companies doing with data and how does that impact our lives? So I think sort of outside of HIPAA, something that we haven't fully come to an understanding of is how should data be used? Who owns it? Do patients own it? Do health systems own it? Do companies own it? Really diving into that, that's something that we're working out every day as we go. And so I think, I don't know whether it's helping or hurting innovation that that isn't as clearly defined as it could be, but it definitely is having some sort of impact.
Yeah, it doesn't help that the High Tech Act, but the technology part of HIPAA is literally being written as we're going to try to keep up with this. So and it creates different, I mean, you come from the EMR world, even like trying to create technology that helps them talk to each other or share data across that has been slow to keep up with the innovation.
Yeah, I think also the interesting thing with HIPAA is that it's very subject to interpretation. And so I think one of the challenges that we do see companies face in working with a variety of healthcare systems is they might go to work with a new system and hear that that system's interpretation of what data is PHI is actually different than another one that they worked with. And so there's back-end considerations for that of how the infrastructure of their product or application might be configured. And so I guess in that respect, that can present a challenge for companies. I also think it's really interesting. We're seeing more and more sort of the, can you re-identify healthcare data? So you think it's been de-identified, but using elements, can that actually be associated back to a patient? And more, the more data we collect, even when we think it's de-identified, the more you're seeing examples of, well, if you actually comb through this and compare this to other public records, you can pair people up.
Yeah.
I think that that presents some interesting implications for, well, then how do we truly feel that this data is safe and de-identified and things like that?
I've taken up a bunch of your time. I really appreciate it very much. One thing I do just kind of want to wrap up on, we referenced Silicon Valley earlier. I think that that kind of has the name brand of tech and tech innovation. But we're sitting here in Los Angeles. You know, I live over on the West Side. I've seen firsthand the effect of Silicon Beach exploding there. What's happening in Los Angeles? What is really exploding kind of the technology scene down here?
Yeah, I mean, I think we're, in my mind, LA is catching up to where it always should have been. So it's the second largest city in the country. We should have a sort of startup and innovation ecosystem to match. And for a while, I think it wasn't quite there. And we were seeing our friends to the north really taking a lot of the spotlight on that. But recognizing that there is a lot of innovation happening here in Los Angeles. I think the Silicon Beach sort of phenomenon with Snapchat and with a lot of the other companies that are in that area, really building that ecosystem, which requires, you know, not only interesting companies, but investors and customers and things like that, that is starting to reach a point where we are seeing potential for significantly more growth. We talked at the beginning about Techstars and the variety of programs that they have. And similarly, they see a lot of opportunity here in Los Angeles. We have the healthcare program. They have a Los Angeles City program. There's a Techstars music program with Sony. And so I think more and more that ecosystem is building. And I think that's the critical thing, is it's hard to create a great startup environment in a vacuum. And so if you don't have a lot of key players who are involved to come up with not only the ideas, but the funding and the customers and things like that, it's challenging. So it's exciting to see that expanding more and more in Los Angeles.
Absolutely. Well, thanks again for sitting down with me. I really appreciate it. If people want to learn a little bit more about the accelerator program we've been talking about today, where can they find more information about that?
They could go to our website, so www.techstarscedarsinaiaccelerator.com.
Okay.
We've got tons of information up there, so you can learn a little bit more about the program, about our startups that have been through the program previously, the mentors, lots of great information on there, and also my email, my LinkedIn, everything is on there, so people can use that to reach out as well.
Great. Thank you so much.
Sure thing. Thank you.